You're listening to the RBN Energy Blogcast. This is an audio version of RBN Energy's daily blog, the oil and gas industry's go-to source for insight. Every day, we cover commodity fundamentals, industry changes, and developing trends across energy markets. And now, we're making it easier than ever to enjoy our blogs. Whether it's on your drive into work, while you're at the office, or at home walking the dog, settle in, turn the volume up, and enjoy.
Thursday, June 25, 2020. Time is not on my side. Natural gas futures plunged to record June lows. Why now? Published by Sheetal Nasta. The CME NYMEX Henry Hub prompt contract settled at $1.482 per million BTU yesterday, down 11.5 cents, or 7%, from the previous day and the lowest settle that the market has ever seen during June trading. That's also a 33 cent, or 18% drop from just 2 weeks ago when prompt futures were around $1.80 per million BTU. The immediate rationale is the larger-than-expected and larger-than-normal storage build reported by the Energy Information Administration yesterday. But current price levels are also indicative of bigger problems looming for the gas market, namely that while gas production is down, total demand, including exports, has been exceptionally weak too. As a result, by mid-July, the storage inventory appears likely to reach record highs for that time of year, record highs that may well persist through the end of injection season in early November unless there is a substantial correction in the gas supply-demand balance. Moreover, it's looking less and less likely that relief will come from the demand side. Today, we look at the drivers behind the latest gas market meltdown and implications for the balance of injection season. U.S. natural gas futures haven't been on the same nausea-inducing roller coaster that oil prices have thus far in 2020, but it's fair to say that the gas market is feeling its collective stomach drop right about now. As we explained a few days ago in our blog called That Schadenfreude, gas prices already were weak, averaging about $1.80 per million BTU in 2020 to date, lower than the annual average has been in the past 25 years. Prompt futures started the year above $2 per million BTU but quickly tumbled to multi-decade lows by mid-January as wintry weather failed to materialize, and it became clear that the year-on-year surplus in storage that had carried over from 2019 wasn't going anywhere anytime soon. Then came COVID-19 and market worries that business closures and social distancing measures would clip domestic consumption, sending front-month futures still lower through March. In reality, the impact to domestic gas consumption was offset by colder-than-normal weather through April, which ended up boosting residential commercial use enough to whittle down the storage surplus somewhat and buoy prices again. Rather, the real trouble came in May. Widespread U.S. LNG cargo cancellations for exports to Europe and Asia, where COVID lockdowns and record storage inventories had flipped what had been premium prices versus Henry Hub to discounts. U.S. feed gas demand for LNG exports since April fell from upwards of 8 BCF per day in the first quarter of this year to 6.4 BCF per day in May and 3.9 BCF per day so far in June. Moderate weather in the past couple of months also has capped domestic consumption. See our U.S. Net Gas Billboard report for daily supply-demand data. As we noted in that Schadenfreude, lower 48 gas production has also come off, to the tune of almost 10 BCF per day on average from its peaks near 95 BCF per day, and in May and June, that's helped tighten the supply-demand balance somewhat relative to last year and work off some of the surplus in store. But lower production has not made enough of a dent to allay market fears. The storage surplus has persisted at more than 600 BCF above last year and about 400 BCF above the five-year average for these same weeks. Despite these bearish factors, Henry futures had been hanging on in the $1.55 to $1.80 per million BTU range through May and June and even traded above $1.80 per million BTU as recently as a couple of weeks ago. However, yesterday the floor on gas prices dropped out, so to speak. Within hours of the EIA's weekly storage report yesterday of a rare triple-digit storage injection of 120 BCF for last week, the futures market collapsed below $1.50 and settled at a record low for June trading of $1.482 per million BTE. Moreover, it's the entire 2020-21 curve that's shifted lower between June 11th and now, particularly for the balance of summer 2020 now July through October, and winter 2020 to 2021, or November through March. So, why did prices fall through the floor now? The short answer is time. In May and June, the market was still holding on to prospects of hot weather and the resulting gas demand for power generation to help offset, at least in part, the massive export demand losses. And as recently as last week, near-term forecasts for late June and early July were calling for well above normal temperatures. 2 weeks on, and with those hotter-than-normal weather forecasts moderating as the days tick by, those hopes are evaporating, and the market is running out of time to reverse the march of storage toward an all-time high by the end of injection season. The 120 BCF injection for the week ending June 19 was the highest we've seen for any week in June since 2010, and it brings the U.S. working gas inventory as of last week to 3,012 BCF. That increases the surplus versus last year to 710 BCF, from 690 BCF in the previous week, the first weekly uptake in that surplus since early May. It also increases the surplus to the five-year average to 452 BCF, from about 400 BCF in the weeks prior. Moreover, our Nat Gas Billboard storage model suggests the inventory is headed toward the five-year high by mid-July. If we then take the five-year average net injection rate from mid-July through the first week of November and carry the inventory forward, we would reach a peak inventory of 4,234 BCF. That would not only be a record high, the highest we've reached is 4,047 BCF in November 2016, but also would come perilously close to what EIA calls the demonstrated peak working gas capacity, with the sum of the largest volumes reported in individual field, 4,261 BCF as of EIA's November 2019 estimates. It's less likely that the market would approach that level, as prices would likely force a more severe correction before that happens. But actual industry expectations, as reflected in the historical daily Intercontinental Exchange, or ICE, end of storage EIA futures settlements, have been creeping up since mid-May, and at 3,990 BCF as of yesterday's settlement, they are not too far off the 4,047 BCF peak seen in 2016. Prices are clearly signaling for some sort of correction in the supply-demand balance to stave off severe storage constraints this fall. We've seen this before, most recently in 2015 to 2016 and before that in 2011 to 2012. In both periods, the year-on-year and five-year average surplus in storage climbed close to or above 900 BCF. In those instances, what saved the market was that lower gas prices spurred coal-to-gas switching in the power generation sector, boosting power burn enough to work off the surplus. In 2016, a slowdown in production and rising exports from both pipeline flows to Mexico and LNG exports helped as well. The problem this time around, though, is that both of those levers lack the torque that they had in past years. The surge in gas production over the past decade has priced out coal-fired power generation, in many cases permanently. A massive build-out of gas-fired generating capacity has been accompanied by widespread coal plant retirements. So, structurally speaking, much of the coal-to-gas switching has already happened, and there's limited ability for power burn to respond to lower prices, leaving weather, like always, as the biggest influence on injection season demand. As for LNG exports, well, if you've been following our blogs or our LNG Voyager report lately, you know that exports are unlikely to save the market this year. Feed gas demand for exports this month is now running below year-ago levels, despite new liquefaction capacity being added. The market is just not buying. So many cargoes are being canceled. And the global dynamics and prices that have led to those cargo cancellations are expected to persist through injection season. That leaves the supply side, namely production, as the biggest, non-weather, lever for balancing the market, at least until LNG exports recover, possibly by winter when domestic and European heating picks up. Suffice it to say, the gas market is in for a stomach-churning injection season that likely will involve further production cuts, or else relinquishing control of the natural gas equilibrium to those two uncontrollable forces, weather and time. Time Is On My Side was written by Norman Mead, or Jerry Ragavoy, and appears as the fourth song on side one of the Rolling Stones' second album, 12x5. The song had been previously recorded by Kai Winding and Irma Thomas. The Stones' version borrows heavily from the Irma Thomas rendition. The Stones recorded two versions of the song in 1964. The first version, recorded at Regent Sound in London, features an organ intro. This was the version that was released as a single in the US in September 1964. The second version, recorded at Chess in Chicago, and featuring a guitar intro, was the single released in the UK. Time Is On My Side went to number 6 on the Billboard Hot 100 Singles chart, making it the first top 10 single for the Rolling Stones in the US. Personnel on the record were Mick Jagger on lead vocals and tambourine, Keith Richards on lead guitar and backing vocals, Brian Jones on rhythm guitar and backing vocals, Bill Wyman on bass and backing vocals, Charlie Watts on drums, and Ian Stewart on Vox Continental organ. 12x5 was the second studio album by the Rolling Stones. Recorded between February and September 1964 at Regency Sound in London and Chess in Chicago, the Andrew Lew Goldham-produced album was released in October 1964. It went to number 3 on the Billboard Top 200 Albums chart and has been certified gold by the Recording Industry Association of America. The Rolling Stones are an English rock band formed in London in 1962. They have released 30 studio albums, 28 live albums, 26 compilation albums, 3 EPs, and 120 singles. They have sold over 240 million records worldwide. The Stones have won 1 Billboard Music Award, 4 Grammy Awards, 3 MTV Video Music Awards, and 2 World Music Awards. They are members of the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, the Grammy Hall of Fame, and the UK Music Hall of Fame. Mick Jagger was knighted by the Queen of England in 2006. Mick Jagger, Keith Richards, Charlie Watts, and Ronnie Wood are the current members of the band. The Rolling Stones continue to record and tour.
This has been the RBN Energy Blogcast. Thanks for listening.